interested in some of the items that have come to light in the news this week and in a few weeks preceding this, especially big news, and the world doesn't yet know what the impact of it will be. It's coming out of Russia. News seems to be that there is a change underway in Russia, especially in this new Congress that convened. And Gorbachev, of course, is the one who more or less spearheading these changes, almost through a matter of necessity. No longer can any country of the world, and that includes Russia, maintain a position of supremacy and power in the world just through military means alone. And their policy up to this point has been pretty much that. But they realize that this is not enough in today's world to maintain supremacy. And of course, their goal is to maintain supremacy. They've never lost sight of the original principle of the Communist Manifesto of worldwide supremacy and worldwide rulership. And so it's in the interest of this, really, that they've had to more or less take another look at the method that they are using and changes in the method that they of necessity must make in order to still meet those goals or at least work towards them. Probably what has influenced them mostly has been the great change that has taken place in the Orient. And the move westward, it seems, of the principles of finance and capitalism, which are making countries like Japan and even some of the smaller countries, more insignificant ones of 20, 25 years ago, like Korea and Malaysia and Hong Kong and areas like that, are now becoming giants, some of the economic giants in the world. And the economic supremacy of the world seems to be moving westward. Even the United States might lose her position in time to that area of the world, which has such great resources and people and cheap labor and very, very intelligent and well-educated means of being able to mass produce as well as to now to innovate and to invent. Russia has realized that their system does not allow them to compete on the international market. They never have competed on the international market in goods and that sort of thing. When was the last time you saw a Russian car? Well, of course, they probably wouldn't be. They probably couldn't get an import license to import them into this country. But even other countries, even other communist countries, have very little in the way of goods that come from Russia itself. They're not an exporting nation to a great extent. Their system does not allow them to do that. It's not productive. It's not a system that mass produces. And so it's interesting that the present administration, powers that be in Russia, are aware of this fact and realize that to maintain any kind of world supremacy, they've got to reach out. They've got to fulfill their niche in the world trade situation, because here's where the power of the world really exists today. And of course, if they can back it up with military strength, that's all well and good. It makes them all the more powerful. But primarily, economic and financial power is far more influential in world affairs today than military power. That is just sitting there not being used. And of course, it's a dangerous thing to try to use that as a sole means of supremacy. Because any kind of military force that is used today, of necessity, will work in a very negative way towards the one who uses it. Russia cannot if she actually used her military power to gain supremacy, probably would be pretty much decimated along with the rest of the world. So, thinking people, educated minds, do not work along those lines. Now, up till now, we've had people in power in Russia who have not thought in terms, they've not been educated in terms of worldwide relationships on those bases, but now they are. It's a whole new set of men in power over there. This happened in China, you know, beginning about 15 years ago, and certainly within the last decade. The whole administration of the thinking and the whole direction of China was changed as a result of men who were educated in the West, in economics and that sort of thing, and how to maintain a position of power in the world through world trade and through mass production of goods and that sort of thing, rather than just the threat of a lot of guns and battleships and atomic bombs and so on. And so Russia's learned their lesson, observed that, and they see the tremendous growth, and of course they're sort of caught in the middle, aren't they? They are not on friendly terms with all of this vast wealth and power that exists over there on their eastern border, and they're not on real friendly terms, or haven't been on friendly terms, with the great mass of power and wealth on their western border, so they've been sort of caught in the middle. Now they're going to try to change their image and be on friendlier terms with those who have been their adversaries, try to reach out into the world and present a better image and to have more influence in the world marketplace. It's interesting because this naturally causes us to wonder what the impact of it will be from a prophetic point of view. We know that it's Russia that is going to be the one, the instigator, will be the one who eventually, and it might not be so far in the future, we just don't know, will be the aggressor in the attack upon Israel. And we say, well, how does this fit in with all of that? She's turning the other cheek, as it were, and presenting a more peaceful image. Well, those in our country who look at this going on, they say that it makes Russia even more dangerous in some respects. For instance, the first act that took place was a compromise and a treaty to pull out intermittent range missiles out of Europe. Well, who does that give the advantage to immediately? Why, as far as that part of the country is concerned, to those who are closest, it puts the United States long range from the area, but Russia is right on the borders. And so it gives Russia a greater liberty to act and to do what they want in that whole area of the world. Well, of course, Israel would be in that area of the world, wouldn't it? Without some sort of immediate retaliation that could really be damaging and hurt. And so many of our observers are saying that detente and this new move on Russia really makes them more formidable, even though on the surface they might seem to be far more friendly towards us as far as their achieving their long-range goals are concerned. Certainly if they maintain their status quo as it existed in the past, they would become a second-rate nation economically in the world, and sooner or later probably militarily too. It's interesting to realize, and we've come to realization of this in our studies, midweek studies in Rutherford. We've been going through the book of Isaiah, and we have been in that part of Isaiah that involves the burdens or the dooms upon Babylon, upon Moab, upon Damascus, which was Syria, and upon Ethiopia, and on the land o'ershadowed with wings beyond the rivers of Ethiopia. And in reading the description of these and what the Lord does by way of bringing about their doom, and that's what he's saying here, we found that this represents various segments of the world structure, the powers of the society that exist today. And there's a progression here in every one of these, which begins primarily or pretty much with the beginning of the time of trouble, and we can see how it works through our day and all the way up until the point of the millennial age and into the millennial age. We were surprised to find so many scriptures that we could relate to the millennial age itself, which also related to the final destruction and doom and of these particular forces in the world. Babylon, of course, being what remains of the Catholic Church itself. Moab, we were pretty well able to tie into to the Protestant world. The description of it fit very well. And, of course, Damascus, or Syria, was, and Assyria, rather, was the great force from the east that was a threat of the world in those days. He's taking the world scene as it existed in Isaiah's day and using it as a backdrop to project prophecy of things that would happen, events that would happen, as the Lord would carry them out in our day. We got pretty much the same backdrop, haven't we? We've got a tremendous power sitting in the east that is threatening the world, the Western world, and is particularly a threat to Israel today, according to the scriptures, Ezekiel's prophecy and so on. And then we had the Western world, the land o'ershadowed with wings, particularly describes the United States, even consistent with our emblem, isn't it? The wing of the eagle with outstretched wings. But it describes the position of the United States as being a protectorate type of nation, particularly with respect to the people that were scattered in fields, which was a reference, of course, to Israel and their restoration here at the end of the age, and how the United States would be the country that would give them the protection they needed to become reestablished. And of course, we find there that even the United States and our government and our system of government here is not going to have any place in the kingdom eventually, even though the end of that carried over into the kingdom and showed how that its final destruction of all of these things will really take place within the kingdom itself. While the systems go down now, however, the principles that are involved in all of these will exist as long as people keep coming up from the grave with these things in their mind. As he's talking about the utter destruction of the present society that will have no place in a whole new arrangement or government of the kingdom. Well, we could spend 2 or 3 weeks going through all of these, I guess, and we don't want to do that. We want to center upon one, which is described in the 23rd chapter of Isaiah. It's the burden concerning Tyre. And I'm not going to read from the King James because I'm convinced that Isaiah is one of the most difficult prophecies to understand and to make anything out of, mainly because of the symbolisms that are there, but I think also because of the rather cryptic style that the translators of the King James Version of the Bible used in trying to interpret it or translate it. There was a committee that translated the Bible back in the days of King James, and whoever got this portion to translate wasn't as clear in his use of language as some of the others, I don't think, even though it's far more cryptic type of prophecy, but I think the translators had something to do with making it even more obscure. Because we can go to some other translations of the book of Isaiah, and it's much easier, even though it's saying the same thing, it's much easier to understand. And one of the better ones, I think, and I'm not sure what translation he tapped off of was the Amplified Bible, but it does put it in language, reconstructs the obscurity of the old 15th century English into more modern language, it's easier to get the point to understand. So I'm going to be using this, and it hasn't changed any of the thoughts at all, but you can follow along in the King James and realize that it's far more obscure. And the first verse here more or less introduces this, the fact that this is something that God is going to do, that it's whatever Tyre represents in the modern day scene is doomed. Everything eventually of this present evil world is doomed, isn't it? It's going to come to an end, and it's going to give way to the kingdom. Whether it comes to a violent end or not, a lot of this doesn't indicate that it is ended violently, but a lot of it is an integration process when the kingdom begins. And this is a prediction against Tyre. Now, Tyre, back in the olden days, those days, back in Bible days, was a commercial nation. It was probably one of the greatest commercial cities, and it was a nation also, of olden times. Tyre was one that reached out with, they were a seafaring nation. They were the ancient Phoenicians. Some think that they traveled even across the Atlantic Ocean, and that some of the colonies of the North American Indians or the South American Indians were actually Phoenician colonies. Maybe ships that went too far and finally ended up over in the coast of South America, but they do know that they colonized all of North Africa. Carthage was an empire that grew out of one of those colonies, Phoenician colonies. They had colonies on the continent of Europe, their continent of Italy mainly, and then they sailed out into the Atlantic Ocean. They even have record of them colonizing the western coast of Africa. And that's how they think they might have got North South America. It's only about 1,200 miles between Africa and South America, the closest point. But anyway, they were a commercial, mercantile nation. And so the Lord used them, apparently, to identify something in our structure of our society today, which is very commercial and very mercantile. And as we go through this, we see how well and how the very prophetic glimpses it gives of its history fit so well to what we call capitalism. Now, capitalism is one of the great forces and powers of the world today. And when we say capitalism, we're not necessarily talking about it from the standpoint of its definition relative to nations, even though the United States is a great capitalist power. There are other capitalist powers in the world. There have been capitalist powers in the past. We're thinking of capitalism in its broader sense. Capitalism, to a great extent, is what has affected the principles of free enterprise and competition is what has built up the economy of the Orient today. Capitalism has been spreading westward, and it seems that the westward movement has been going on for quite some time. When you look up the history of capitalism, you find that it is nothing new, but what they call modern capitalism had its beginning in Europe primarily as the old feudalistic system faded out during the 17th century. It probably was free enterprise and that sort of thing. A lot of it was related to the conquest of the world by the early explorers and by nations, especially England and Spain and France and Portugal and Holland and Germany and all of the major countries of Europe were all very interested in trying to acquire land in other parts of the world when they found out it was out there. And the reason for doing that, most of it was done through holding companies. The money was supplied for these explorations through holding companies, especially in England, which had a lot of freedom in these other lands to do what they wanted. Back home, why there was still a lot of feudalism, and the the governments and those who were in power pretty much controlled what they could do and when they could do it and what products they could manufacture and so on. And there was a lot of control over them. But when they reached out into other areas of the world, those controls no longer could be imposed to any great extent. And so they began to deplete the resources of the countries that they planted their flags on. And when I say the resources, not only the mineral resources, but a lot of them went after gold and silver, didn't they? And they stole it from the people that are already there and had mined it. And a lot of the other resources, but primarily, or to a great extent, the people resources of those lands. They found out that it was extremely cheap labor. As a matter of fact, they made slaves out of them. The capitalists, those early people of the capitalistic system, they weren't doing it for the good of mankind. They were doing it for greed. But it was capitalism nevertheless. And of course, it came in time that it began to realize that there had to be some controls imposed on capitalism, or they, left on their own, would begin to develop another feudal system where the people of the world would be enslaved to the few who controlled the resources, who controlled the companies and the money and so on. And so governments began to impose, and that's when England really began to develop as a capitalistic country, when they began to impose certain restrictions so that capitalism could grow, actually, and not be gobbled up by a few. The results of capitalism and the benefits of it. And so it began during the 16th century in Europe. And it grew fast with the mercantile development of the mercantile system in Europe. Capitalism began to grow fast. A whole new system of gentry emerged out of it, as you might say. People who began to become the wealthy people in Europe were the ones who were involved in trade and later on in manufacturing. It began to change later with the Industrial Revolution, why capitalism really began to really increase and to blossom out. It almost ballooned out into the world as a result of the invention of machinery and that sort of thing. And so it was changed, according to historians, in what they call industrial capitalism. That later was changed in our time into what they call mass production capitalism. And I understand now that they don't consider that the Industrial Revolution is all over. We've passed that. We're now in what they call the Technical Revolution, which is played also into the hands of capitalism itself. But the history of it is kind of interesting, and we find, I think, some of it reflected in this prophecy. The second verse, we'll read it through, and we'll just have to kind of hurry through it, but I think you'll get the picture. Be still, ye inhabitants of the coast and merchants of Sidon. Your messengers pass over the sea, replenish you, the wealth and industry. Well, of course, that's some of this is a parenthesis statements that the Amplified puts in. They're not in the original text. Well, here he's talking about Sidon, and this was really more representative of the, you might say, the old aspects of capitalism as it first began. Sidon was an older city than Tyre, but it was a sister city. But it was considerably older than Tyre, and actually it was a result of Sidon that Tyre became a metropolis of its own right. And so here we see more or less the development of it, and how that it was something which spread out from its source. And that's what happened in Europe. Capitalism began to spread out from its source, and it spread out as a result of colonialism. That's how it got over to the United States, actually. Capitalism was here in the old form long before the United States was a country. And so it was through the merchants, as it were. And he says that it really affected those who inhabited the coasts. Well, the coasts of the countries were where they colonized, wasn't it? And he says, on the great waters, the seed or grain of Shihor, the harvest due the overflow, that's a parenthesis, of the Nile River, was Tyre's revenue, and it became merchandise of the nations. Well, here is a reference to the fact that under this system, why they harvested the value from these colonies, and it became the merchandise, their merchandise, with which to gain money and power and so on. It became the merchandise of the nations at the expense of those who were being colonized. And that's how capitalism actually got its start, according to historians. That seems to be the reference to that start here. And then it says, be ashamed, O Sidon, mother city of Tyre, now a widow, bereaved of her children. It's more or less looking back on the history of this from the point of this prophecy, standing more or less at the point at which we stand today, interestingly enough, and can look back on these things. Mother city of Tyre, the mother, or that which was the beginnings of modern capitalism, which is really centered more in the Western world, certainly in the United States, and now moving westward into the Orient. But it had its inception and its beginning in Europe, especially in Great Britain. Mother city of Tyre. Well, we more or less think of Europe as our, more or less our roots, of the mother city, as it were. Now a widow, bereaved of her children. Situation has changed. Now a widow, bereaved of her children. For the sea has spoken, the stronghold of the sea, saying, I have neither travailed nor brought forth children. I have neither nourished and reared up young men nor brought up virgin. Well, here it indicates, as far as Europe was concerned, the whole system began to die as a result of a political change that took place there. And that's a reference to the sea. There's probably socialism had much greater impact in Europe than it ever had in the United States, although it's affected the United States, and to a great extent the controls that we've placed on capitalism have a socialistic flair or flavor to them. But yet in Europe, especially after the First World War, and we'll see how that might be tied in here, the latter end of this prophecy, there was socialism began to have a real impact upon the capitalistic system there, and it didn't look like there was any future for it there from the standpoint of it making that area a world power. It was losing its power, and that was especially true in Great Britain, wasn't it? And all of this, as I say later on, seems to have its inception as a result of the First World War. But it was socialism that pretty much took over the governments of those countries of Europe. In Russia, to the extreme that it became communistic. But of course, this isn't dealing with countries per se. It was dealing with capitalism, the great power that it is in the world, and the various ways that it has changed and how it's affected the world. He says, when the report comes to Egypt, they will be sorely pained over the report about Tyre. Well, that was true, wasn't it? When this began to happen and the world saw that it was happening, those countries of the world that were tied in with Europe, you might say, were in that basket of eggs. It had a tremendous impact on them. Finally, the colonies, Britain's colonies and Europe's colonies, all began to separate. there was no longer an advantage of them being tied in at all with the structure of Europe. And Europe can no longer hold on to them. There's a cry for freedom and for self-government and so on. And so, you might say, the power of capitalism, of this particular principle of our world, social principle in a way, began to move. It says, pass over to Tarshish. Seek safety, to seek safety as exiles, wail ye inhabitants of the Tyre coast. And that's what really happened. Well, capitalism began to diminish as a result of the intrusion of socialism in Europe, even in Great Britain to a great extent. Why the power of capitalism began to move westward to what was, had been the colonies, you might say, or the fringes. And, of course, the United States was sitting there. It was just ready-made to build on this entire structure and became the great power of the world that it is, and mostly since. Of course, it was the Industrial Revolution that they attributed to, again, the late 1800s, but it wasn't until after the First World War that the United States really began to, you might say, just mushroomed out into a world power through the economic principles of capitalism, while the other countries of the world were throttled by socialism. But the principles of socialism are government control, not free enterprise. Of course, it's all become somewhat intermixed, doesn't it? But basically, socialism and communism's extreme is complete government control of all industry, of all enterprise. No freedom of enterprise, no competition, nothing of that sort that lends impetus to and vitality to a system, because then they simply are selfish and want to make more. And so it moved westward. And Tarshish, of course, was always a reference to the land to the west. Is this your jubilant city whose origins date back to antiquity? This is how they look now upon the situation in Europe. Whose own feet are accustomed to carry her far off to settle daughter cities? They were the ones who were really the active agents in settling the world, weren't they? Who has purposed this against Tyre, the bestower of crowns, whose merchants were princes, and whose traders were the honored of the earth? All of that, you know, stating it here from the standpoint of looking back on it. Look at them now as to what they were at one time as far as, relatively speaking, world power was concerned. It was centered there in Europe, wasn't it? And especially in England as the great mercantile nation that it was. The Lord of hosts has purposed it. He says the Lord had all this in mind. In the very beginning, he knew all of this, how all of this would happen. As a matter of fact, he was the one who set the stage and carried out the steps of this world progression of capitalism towards the West. The Lord of hosts has purposed it, and then the parenthesis, in accordance with a fixed principle of his government, to defile the pride of all glory and to bring into dishonor and contempt all the honored of the earth. In other words, those who are more or less in defiance of the Lord have made claims, and that's what Europe did, didn't they? The governments of Europe that were involved in and supported capitalism were the very ones that claimed to be the governments that were ruling by divine right. They were the governments that had the right to exercise power under what they considered to be the kingdom of Christ on earth. And so this was a great dishonor as far as God was concerned. And so he said that he was bringing this contemptuous position and claim to an end. He was bringing it into dishonor. And of course the monarchies of Europe all disappeared, didn't they, in the First World War? Nearly so. I think that probably right there pinpoints that statement pinpoints 1914. That's when that old system of monarchies under which the old idea of capitalism flourished came to an end as a result of the First World War in 1914. Overflow your lands, like the overflow of the Nile, which he had mentioned earlier. Now, of course, it's the overflow of the Nile, which every year, which fertilized the land of Egypt and made it a nation that could produce on the world market, could trade on the world market. But it was the overflowing of the Nile which made them a productive nation. When Russia built the Aswan Dam, they disrupted the balance of nature there, and the Egyptians were not happy at all about it. This annual overflowing of the Nile River was now controlled. It didn't happen. They had to start going buying fertilizer and put on that land. And Egypt and Russia have never been friends since. But it's a reference to that fact. But now he's not talking about the Nile River. He's talking about the Western world, who is becoming very fertile through the matter of capitalism. And overflowing like the Nile River. He says, O daughter of Tarshish. There again, talking about the Western world, the lands to the west. There is no girdle of restraint on you anymore. And then the parenthesis was to make you pay tribute or custom duties to Tyre. Well, they were pretty well linked into Europe's trade for such a long time, but now there's no world restraints as far as capitalism is concerned in the Western world. And it began to flourish and prosper, became very fertile. Look at what happened over here. He says, he stretched his hand over the sea. He shook the kingdoms. The Lord hath given a command concerning Canaan to destroy her strongholds and fortresses. Well, of course, Tyre and Sidon were the cities of Canaan. And so his saying is that the Lord took a hand. He stretched his hand out over the sea. Well, it was the socialistic forces of the world that the Lord used as the means by which he lowered the strength and the strongholds of Canaan, Tyre, and Sidon, the capitalistic systems which seem to be flourishing even in those countries. And he said, ye shall no more exalt, O Tyre, you oppressed and exhorted one, virgin daughter of Zion, of Sidon, arise, pass over to Kittim, Cyrus, but even there you will have no rest. Well, I'm not sure just what the impact of that. Kittim, of course, was the island of Cyprus, which was also to the west, but it almost seems like that what he's saying is that the power of those countries would now more or less rest in their holdings in other areas of the world rather than what they had in Europe itself. And of course, with those holdings being diminished, why their power was going to gradually diminish. Until today, we see that aside from the fact that they're all aggregated, and here are the prophecies that deal with this too, aggregated under a great community, economic community in Europe, every country standing alone isn't very strong anymore, economically or even militarily. He says, look at the land of the Chaldeans. Well, of course, there's the land to the east, isn't it? The Chaldeans eventually swallowed up the Assyrians. And the Chaldeans, of course, were the great threat to all of Canaan from the east. Look at the land of the Chaldeans, the people and not the Assyrians designed and assigned Tyre for wild beasts, and those who, and this is a parenthesis, previously dwelt in the wilderness, they set up their siege work and overthrow its palaces and made it a ruin. Well, that's what communist aim was, wasn't it, as far as Europe is concerned, or as all capitalism is concerned. It's an enemy, a great enemy, and they propose to lay siege to it and to destroy it. And of course, to a certain extent they did. Certain countries in Europe they were able to gain control of as a result of the Second World War. And their aim still is control, and their control would be that which, in the past, would be that which would have destroyed this principles of free enterprise and of capitalism. But we're beginning to see a change, and that's the interesting part of the prophecy, that it forecasts that change. Howdy, ships of Tarshish, for your stronghold of Tyre is laid waste, your strength has been destroyed. And he says, and in that day Tyre will be in obscurity and forgotten for 70 years according to the days of one dynasty. Well, that's kind of interesting. The one dynasty might be Russia, because it's the impact of Russia on Europe and the principles which Russia stands for, which has really pretty much laid low the fact that of capitalism in Europe, that it can produce anything in the way of advantage for the people there, that it can make them strong. And so he says, according to the days of one dynasty, after the end of 70 years, Tyre shall sing as an harlot who has been forgotten, but again attracts her lovers. Well, you know, an interesting thing is that communist government of Russia took over in 1918. 1918 pretty much spelled the end of the First World War. Most of the countries of Europe, the dynasties went down, the monarchies went down, and governments that replaced them were greatly socialistic in nature, and even became more so afterward. Some of them even very, very leaned very, very strongly towards communism politically. In some countries like France and Italy, where it was only the coalition of other parties that kept the Communist Party from ruling, which was the strongest single party in France and Italy. And then, of course, in the western sector of Europe, why, they all became satellite nations of Russia. But he says that, and so capitalism, per se, as represented in Tyre, mercantilism and that sort of thing, began to diminish and sort of went into obscurity. Even in this country, it was greatly influenced by socialism to a great extent. We don't have pure capitalism over here. We've got a lot of government control today on capitalism, which is, of course, the way in Europe that the fascist governments chose to control it, absolute control over all industry. The socialists believed pretty much in total control over industry, and the communists believed in total control over industry, and so capitalism, per se, diminished greatly in those countries. But it says for 70 years. You know, the interesting thing is that 1988 is exactly 70 years from 1918, and all of a sudden we find things changing in Europe. Other countries in Europe, the beginning of the, as I say, the coalition of, economic coalition of those countries, I forget what they call that now, but they have a name for it. England was the last to join. They began stimulating free enterprise and capitalistic standards all 10, 15 years ago, and they've been gradually been improving and building up their industry and their ability to trade on the world market. Russia has not done this. Now she's almost forced into doing it. And this latest statement out of Russia, and this latest Congress of the Communist Party in Russia, they apparently are ready to make a big change and to begin to allow certain features of free enterprise and competitive trade in Russia, because they realize there's no impetus there for the people unless they do it. And it's only those portions of the parts of the world that have done this that are to any extent moving ahead and becoming any kind of an economic or power force in the world today. And so it says at the end of 70 years, according to the days of one dynasty, probably because Russia itself, who sees after 70 years it's not working and is going to have to change things. After the end of 70 years, Tyre shall sing as an harlot who has been forgotten but attracts her lovers again. Now, all of a sudden, the principles of capitalism are beginning to seem more attractive, aren't they? Even to those countries that discarded them and those governments that discarded them. And so he's likened her, not saying she is a harlot, but like a harlot that is again attempting to, that has been forgotten, who is again attempting to be attractive. Says, go take a harp and go about the city. Forgotten harlot, play skillfully and make sweet melody, sing many songs that you may be remembered. Of course, as the westward movement of capitalism has expressed itself in what you would call economic success of those areas of the world that have espoused it, especially the Orient in recent years, why you might say that this is a matter of capitalism more or less coming into its own again, becoming more attractive. It's singing its song, as it were, and a sweet melody to those who have espoused its cause and using its method. It says, and after the end of 70 years, the Lord will remember Tyre. Sometime after the end of this 70 years, he says that it would be in the Lord's interest to see that this system begins to prosper again because it can produce so much. It's a mass production type of system. At the end of 70 years, the Lord will remember Tyre, and she will remember her hire and will play the harlot. Now, most of the translations don't say that. Most of the translations say simply that she shall resume her commerce again, and don't really picture it in the role of a harlot, but will resume her commerce again, come to the fore as far as the world is concerned. With all the kingdoms of the world upon the face of the earth. Well, of course, many of the kingdoms of the world are already based upon that. But now, it's becoming attractive. It's in the Orient, in Western Europe. And it's becoming attractive to the very one who has been the arch enemy of capitalism, the foe of capitalism, and that's Russia itself. She realizes that she's not getting anywhere. She's standing still, and she's spinning her wheels, and she's going to have to do something to generate more impetus on the part of the people. And it's the capitalistic system that does this. It's obvious. It's been proven. And so now Russia is ready to change. It doesn't make her even friendlier to the West, but she's just changed her relationship to the whole world. You'll find Russia will be out there with a much friendlier face. It'll be trying to import and to export, particularly on the world markets more freely, and to everybody in the world, to all the countries of the world, it's going to seem like Russia's now one of the good guys. The Lord knows what. And then it says, but the prophets of Tyre's new prosperity, that's a parenthesis of this translation, her grain and her hire will be dedicated to the Lord eventually. Now that's the interesting part of all this. The Lord has a kingdom about ready to start. He doesn't want a kingdom where he's going to have to, where all of the people of the world are either dead and the resources of the world completely destroyed. None of the prophecies seem to indicate that's what's going to happen as a result of Armageddon. But he's got a world that's got billions of people that are going to be carried over into his kingdom. And it doesn't really make much sense not to have the world be able to produce the resources to take care of that population. It's going to take a lot of food. It's going to take as much as it does now. It's going to take more because it's not going to have starvation in the world. It's going to have to be better organized than it is today. It's not going to have people that are unclothed in the world in those days. And so what the capitalism is really doing today, it has the ability to mass produce for masses of people. Capitalism hadn't come into being like the world has been in sad shape a long time ago with the great number of people that have to be taken care of and provided for. And so the Lord is seeing to it that right up to the very end that the world is set up to mass produce. But he's going to take it over. Eventually it will all be integrated in a different way into the kingdom. We won't have a capitalistic system that is based on greed or money won't be the emphasis at all. But initially, the ability of it to mass produce for masses of people, according to this prophecy, seemed to be what the Lord's interested in. Her grain and her hire will be dedicated to the Lord. And the parenthesis says, eventually. It will not be treasured nor stored up, for her grain will be used for those who dwell in the presence of the Lord, that they may eat sufficiently and have durable and stately clothing suitable for those who minister at the altar, at God's altar. Well, I don't really agree with that. That's not in the translation. But that they may eat sufficiently and have durable and stately clothing. And so we can see how the Lord is, even now, and all of the things that are happening, and probably this new thing in Russia coming out of this communist congress is all arranged by the Lord preparatory to the kingdom itself. Well, anyway, we've kind of enjoyed going through some of these prophecies. That was one of the later ones we went through, and we can see how they kind of bring us up to date, and there's a lot of detail in what's happening in the world today, more or less hidden in some of these prophecies of doom on the structure of our society. And our Heavenly Father, we come again before Thee to praise Thy great and holy name. We thank Thee for the privilege of this day of coming together, centering our minds upon a portion of Thy Word, and we thank Thee for the impetus and strength that it gives us to realize that we are living so close to Thy kingdom, and that the things that are happening in the world today are all objective towards that kingdom, and that those things which will have no part therein will indeed pass away by Thy great power, and that those things which can be carried over and will be an advantage in the outworking of Thy kingdom, that those things will be saved, and that in Thy great wisdom and knowledge that the kingdom will be a wonderful success, will be a wonderful and happy blessed experience for all mankind, and that only Thy great power and wisdom can achieve. And so we thank Thee for the privilege of seeing this in advance, being able to make it a part of our hope, and our hope is to indeed that Thy kingdom will come and Thy will be done on earth as it is done in heaven. Bless Thy people in every place this day, we pray in Jesus' name.